on the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a one. Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
No, there is.
No, I want to know, does Ohio have professional volleyball teams?
I don't know if Ohio does, but one of my professors in college was from Canada, and he came here on a volleyball scholarship. And he said he was always annoyed by the fact that people would think he was, like, gay or something.
They're the Columbus Fury, and honestly, I'm going to start following them.
Don't follow a Columbus team.
Why?
Have you been to Columbus?
Yes.
Depressing city.
No.
You stand there, the monoliths of government brutalism, and you're like, ugh. And it has like the worst Tim Hortons I've ever been to, which is saying something.
No, you're incorrect. I've
been there three times, and that's my opinion of the city. Awful, hate it.
I lived outside of Columbus for 18 years. It's a great place. No, it's great.
This feels so artificial. There's no soul in that city.
I wholly disagree. I think that city is soul.
Nah.
Not in the same way. It's not as like openly, colorfully sad in the way that Cleveland is.
Or Philadelphia. Or Chicago. Chicago feels like what Columbus is trying to be. That's my take.
Okay, you're allowed to have bad takes.
That's a good take.
So what movie? This is a special thing today.
Two men movie podcast at gmail.com. Tell us why Columbus is a terrible city, and I'm right.
Or tell them why I'm right. Anyway, this is a... You're so frustrating. Little peek behind the curtain. I'm going on the road end of February, beginning of March, and I don't know if I'm gonna have time to edit that weekend, so we're recording a couple episodes. We're like banking an extra one so that I can edit during the week. And so this is the second second day in 2 days that we've been recording, and he's wearing a little thin on me. I love you so much. The open combatism.
Can't handle the truth. This is too much truth coming at him.
So
this is truthradio.com. Change the name of the podcast to a website. I guess. I don't know why I put the .com. I was trying to think of like a call sign, but I couldn't. So I just went to like, I guess we're internet radio, the worst kind of radio.
So
we're changing completely to like a Joe Rogan-esque podcast.
Okay. Can we get into the movie?
Yeah.
Okay. This was a viewer suggested movie. It was suggested in an Instagram comment.
They sent us an entire graphic novel.
Yeah.
Of us watching the movie.
They sent us Alan Moore's The Killing Joke. This was from an Instagram comic from Philip Arledge, who's my brother's friend.
Yeah.
And a listener of the show and big fan. He also commented on our Furiosa posts.
Did he?
Yeah, Philip's a cool dude, and he suggested a great movie.
A fantastic 10 out of 10.
A truly perfect movie.
I was excited just to see that Hoffman was in it.
I'm going to get this out right of the gate. I'm going to have to rewatch this movie just to kind of understand this movie, or I'm going to have to watch one of those like Synecdoche New York Explained videos, but I understood all of the emotion immediately that it was trying to convey.
I understand this movie. Completely. I'm gonna tell you why.
Right
before I watched this movie, I had I was having a nap, and I had one of the like episodes I have sometimes where during this nap I flicker between waking and dreaming with such rapid pace that I start to forget where I'm supposed to be, like where I am. And so like going from that where like I think I'm awake, but I'm not really sure if I'm awake. And then I just start watching this movie and I'm like, oh, I understand it, dude. I get it. I'm here.
I just mean like following, like
I'm in it. I'm there. I gave Hoffman a kiss. I was there.
you slept with him in a burning building.
I slept with him in a burning building.
This is okay. So
I became a thick ginger.
So I think we said the movie, but the movie is Synecdoche, New York, written and directed by Charlie Kaufman. Have you seen any of Charlie Kaufman's?
No, I'm aware of him.
Okay. This is the first movie that he's directed that I've seen. But I've seen a couple of the, I've seen Adaptation and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. So I knew kind of going in, like tonally, what to expect.
Yeah, absurdism.
That it was going to be so absurd and very existential and like,
I mean, the most absurd thing about this film, honestly, is that that production of Death of a Salesman got such high reviews.
Why?
I don't know. I think The Falling Wall was tacky. That's my honest thought. When I watch him drive the car and the thing goes, doot, I'm like, that's kind of gimmicky. It's my theater take. It's not a theater podcast.
Yeah, you saw 30 seconds of the play in the movie.
And then... I was like, that's kind of gimmicky.
Okay.
You can do that off screen. I know, it's not a theater podcast.
So here's the thing. Okay, I texted you about a half hour into watching this where I'm like, breaking this down scene by scene is going to be very difficult and pointless, especially in the first like 30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah, because I really got stuck in that wall. Like, it's because it just kind of falls and it doesn't like crush the car. And it's just like, it's not, the thing is, diverting entirely to this fictional playing universe, the thing is that you doing a crash on stage is never gonna carry the impact of an implied offstage crash, because you're gonna look at that like they didn't really crash the car. You know, it's the whole idea of like sometimes not seeing something, like horror movies, like a lot of times, like if you don't see the monster, you see the monster, it's a letdown, you know, because sure, you're imagining the whole thing. Like doing it off stage with like sound cues and shit, it's going to be a much more visceral image than this kind of small toy car going doo 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 boop. And you're like, okay,
I don't know, maybe everything leading up to it and it feels more
maybe
real. But also they literally broke down that it like it was faulty. So maybe okay, the actual, because he's
maybe
like
in the actual production, it crushes the car.
Yeah, because in because he goes off and is like, we're way too late in production for this, for these types of fuck ups. And he makes sure Michelle Williams is okay. So breaking this down scene by scene is going to be kind of pointless because everything is very existential and absurdist.
I mean, at a certain point, it would take us too long to describe where we are.
Yeah.
Because we're like, so we're in the theater that's in the theater that's in the theater.
So it's a play, but it's not a play. And then we're at a funeral, and then like it's a play of the funeral. And then he's...
And then we're in a play of the funeral of the play of the funeral.
And his Michelle Williams is playing his wife, but also his wife the actress, but is his wife the actress, and the daughter, their daughter never ages even though time passes, which has to be a choice.
Yeah, there's a few of them that don't age nearly as fast as they should.
Right.
Now it's really good. It's probably one of my favorite movies. I'm gonna get on Blu-ray so you force upon people.
Me too.
Because it truly is. I just love absurdist, almost surrealist movies, and I think this is a good one to show people because it still has a plot you can follow. And like some of my favorites, which they're like, I don't understand what's happening at all. This, like, there's a general plot. It's this guy. He does a production. He's a playwright. He does a production of A Death of a Salesman. It does well. His wife takes his daughter and leaves him and goes to Germany. And then it's kind of him just being really depressed, constantly thinking he's about to die because of a new medical issue. Never does. I mean, he dies eventually. And just him dealing with the concept of death and failure will make an increasingly elaborate play. It's kind of like a walk-in play, and it's just a reflection of his own fucking life. Also, importantly, that grant now is like $800,000.
Yes.
Paid out over 5 years in installments. He went so over budget. But yeah, the whole time this is happening, he's trying to reconnect with his daughters, constantly going back and forth between women that he's fucked and cried while fucking, and just having a lot of women problems, just getting older, cleaning toilets. And like the whole thing is existing in this kind of not real, real world where like he's like, they're just like he's in like an advertisement for the book his therapist sells him.
This Also, no one sees this play.
Yeah, no. It takes like they're like 17 years, and he's not even halfway. It's not even begun.
No, no.
Like towards the end, at least you're like, okay, it's starting to reach a point where you can do it. He's never going to think that, but it looks more finalized. Yeah. Like when they're like, it's been 17 years. It isn't even close to looking like it's anything.
He has gotten all of his money.
He lives like this takes like 60 years of working on this play, right? Maybe 50, maybe 40. Decades he works on this play.
Another, yeah, time in this movie doesn't super exist because in the
it's not it does exist, but it's not fucking clear because time always moves forward. We're just never sure how much, and sure. People give different numbers.
Yes, because at the restaurant, Hazel is like, "It's been your wife left a year ago," and Philip Hoffman,
he said it's been a week, and she's like, "It's been a year."
I'm gonna get you a calendar.
I'm inclined to trust everyone but him.
Oh, 1,000%.
He's just completely unaware of the passing of time around him.
It's what human life feels like.
He's like, my daughter's 4. It's like, no, she's 11. And that's why pedophilia is okay.
Yeah, well, that's why it's okay for me to tattoo her. See, I don't know if they're fucking then. I know she's being groomed, absolutely, 100%, not even kind of question. But I don't know if it is sexual yet.
The deep depravity of the German people.
And then when the daughter's like, I need you to apologize for leaving us to go be gay with Eric, and I need to forgive you, and then she can't forgive him, but that's not what happened. And
a guy just follows him around for a long time, becomes him, then die.
Oh, which, yeah, Sammy, it's like, you finally can see me, and then he jumps, and then he's like, I didn't jump, some guy stopped me when he went to Germany to save his daughter.
I thought that's when he went to what's her name?
It might have been Hazel.
Yeah, I think it was Hazel's place. Because he never sees... What's her name? I don't want to say Adele. It's like that.
Adele?
Adele. He never sees her in Germany. But he definitely sees Hazel in the penthouse. Where he goes to jump and the guy's like, bro, don't jump. The penthouse scenes after after she gets with Derek, the son of a realtor who lives in the basement of her constantly burning home.
Yeah, so this
who's been living there since the divorce.
This woman bought a house that's constantly on fire,
and she's worried about it because she doesn't want to burn to death. But it comes with the realtor's like, yeah, my son's been living in the basement since the divorce. His name is Derek. I guess he just comes with the house. This movie made perfect sense.
This movie is great. No, it emotionally, it makes perfect sense. Watch this movie. I cannot recommend this movie enough. I cannot explain to you this movie for shit.
I think it is actually a pretty simple plot. If you just kind of, every time something absurd happens, you just go, okay, and don't think about it too hard. Like, the plot makes perfect sense. There isn't much of a plot. It's mostly him bouncing from woman to woman and then dying while struggling to make this play. But like I think the plot line, like the line of the plot of the narrative, is actually pretty straightforward. It just looks kind of funky.
So okay,
because like it is a linear plot.
So when it opens, when the pipe bursts and it like busts open the right above his eyebrow,
yeah,
and then he starts having all of this brain damage stuff, but it's not related to.
Is that the brain damage?
It's not the brain damage. He just has a bad brain.
He has to make himself cry now.
Yes, and he has the seizure and calls the cops, and he's just like, I'm sick.
I think my mom does a lot.
Calls the cops and she's like, I'm sick.
She says I'm sick a lot.
Okay.
Every like 2 years she gets a new issue that would like, if another person got just that issue, they'd be like, oh, my life is forever over. But she's just piling them on as God just tries to kill her.
Okay.
I don't know what she did to anger God so much.
What did Philip Seymour Hoffman plays Caden? Control?
I think it's a Canto or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Caden. His last name is important.
Caltoc, something like that.
Yeah. What did Caden do to piss off God?
Became a playwright.
That doesn't.
God hates a theater kid. Kicked Lucifer, the original theater kid,
so
out of heaven.
What makes Lucifer the original theater kid?
Have you seen him? He's messy. He's a messy, drama filled bitch, dude.
Okay. So just take over, please. I don't know how to talk about this movie other than it rips.
I think he should have stayed with the blonde wife.
Well, he comes back, he goes back to her, and they're all hunky-dory until he goes crazy about the play. And yes, he has an emotional affair with Hazel, but, like, that's a direct result of going crazy by the play.
Yeah, but, like, before him and Hazel were, like, cry-fucking, she was hitting on him, too. I would have gone with her.
But he did go with her eventually.
Like, even with Hazel first. I'm just saying. She seems like...
But he was
quite the firecracker.
He was her director. He was her direct
boss.
Yeah,
the perfect way to start a relationship.
No.
First off, I firmly believe that a director should always have a relationship with the main lead of the opposite or same gender, the gender they're attracted to. And you started a relationship with your boss, so none of us have any ground to say anything different here.
I'm not saying... Listen. Listen. I'm not saying it doesn't work out. What
Geneva
I am
was saying, your Hoffman.
She was not my boss when we got together, though. He would have been actively her boss.
Yeah, dude.
So you really believe that a director should have a romantic tryst with their lead?
I think the passion's good for the art.
Is this a bit? Or is this a real...
It's a bit that you should always do it.
Oh.
It's not a bit that I believe that... It
works out every once in a while?
It works out every once in a while.
Sure.
It is amazing in this movie that really he has everything a man could want, and he's never happy with it, which I think is the theme of the movie. It's true to life that oftentimes people just aren't happy with what they have. But I mean, he's financially secure.
As an artist.
He's constantly working in a creative, fulfilling way, and just has... Women are scrambling to fuck this man. His therapist wants to fuck him. The lady from Chernobyl wants to fuck him.
His
lead wife wants to fuck him.
The lady in the box office wants to sleep with him. His wife wanted to sleep with him at one point, but his wife also wishes he was dead.
Yeah, and honestly, yeah, she's in therapy. Honestly, it's strictly upgrades after his wife. Both, like, as people who are like, I wish you were dead. And, like, all of them, you know, especially the lead, you know, it's like he's looking progressively hotter women trying to fuck him. He's creatively fulfilled, financially secure.
Yeah. I mean, he's a bad dad, but, like...
We don't see him be a bad dad, really.
Well, he more or less abandons his second daughter.
Yeah.
That's a bad dad.
Yeah, it's not his real daughter.
No, that is equally his real daughter.
He's too focused trying to get the first daughter.
I know, but Ariel is equally his real daughter.
I know. I think that can be excused slightly by the fact that he is dealing with the trauma of his first child being taken away, so he's just developed this, like, obsessive complex about it. It's not like he's actively just like, fuck the second child.
No, but...
Trauma response.
Okay, that doesn't make it okay.
Can you criticize your anti-mental health?
No, that's not how that works.
Tumblr's canceling you.
Shut the fuck up. So,
would you see this play?
What?
Would you see this play? I don't know how it's meant to be experienced. Would you see it?
Yes. So here's how I think it's meant to be
experienced. Like, you walk through the city, right?
Yeah, you would just walk
through the... It's like a Ren fair.
Yes, and it's just... So my question...
Yeah.
Is everyone doing one scene over and over and over again? Or are they also living their own complex lives? Because later at his mother's funeral, he mentions how everyone is the main character in their own story. So are they just going off living their own thing that he may or may not have written?
Well, I think that they're instinctually acting out the lives of the people they're supposed to be. I mean, I know there was something... what was it? I saw some, it was like years ago, where it was like this play you go to, and it's like Clue, it's like a murder mystery, mm-hmm. but it's taking place in a house. And so you can just walk around the house and see all these scenes being acted out, because all these people are acting out the events of this thing happening in the home, but there's not like a stage. They're just like, you walk into a room, you see them go, you can go to a different room, see someone else. So I think you just kind of walk in and wander around.
So that is like essentially three different plays going on at the same time, or however many rooms there are.
Three different scenes, because people go to different scenes, like because like they're just acting like it actually happened and going throughout the house like it happened. They don't, and there's the fourth wall that keeps you apart from it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like if I just came and watched you in Geneva in your home for like 3 hours as you guys lived your life and you just couldn't see me.
Okay, I mean, you can just hang out with us. But like,
well, yeah, but I'm saying that's what it's like. Like, you just go in and you just watch these people reacting to
okay.
the murder.
Sure.
So, I think that's what it would be like.
So is this play like a specific allotted time?
That is not made clear.
I know.
He says he gets to relive the best day of his life over and over, so I imagine
it's one day.
It's long. Yeah, it's one day.
But then all of the other stuff is still going on. Like, they still have parts from, they're still like playing parts from other like previous happenings.
Yeah.
And then the priest has that hella cool fucking like, I'm fucking pissed.
Yeah, it's a play you have to go see many times.
Yeah. Huh?
It's a play you have to go see many times. Because you're not gonna get all the full experience in one go.
Like Synecdoche, New York, you have to experience.
You have to like take a week off. It's like going to Disney World. You have like an entire like couple city block to fucking go through.
So I know he never actually lands on a title, but the title is obviously Synecdoche, New York, right?
I don't know. The first, so he says, "What, simulacrum, Ren?
What
simulacrum? Simulacrum? Well, it means like a perfect kind of copy of something. Whatever." He says that that's the first one he goes with, and his wife shoots it down. I think that's the best name. Like, he nailed it on the first go. And then he gets shot down, so he just keeps jumping from bad name to bad name after that.
And then he has, like, these long, elaborate, like, the unbearable light on an obscure wing in a tiny world. Yeah, he starts naming everything,
like, I name things, which I do appreciate.
Except yours are just, like, sentences. Yours aren't, like, the unbearable light in an obscure world. Yours are just, like, let's let it burn, baby.
Like, some of them get that way.
Sure. Is this the best movie we've recorded for the show so far, do you think? It's between this and A Serious Man for me.
I mean, it's definitely one of the better movies. It's definitely up there. It's top three for sure. I'm not really like a guy that is nitty-gritty rankings. Like, I'll say top three and I won't give an order, but top three.
That's fair. I don't rank each individual movie. I mean, it's movie, no
Hall
Out
the Holly.
Oh, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
Or Hot Frost.
Jesus fucking Christ. I knew you were going to do that. You fucking
statistically
asshole.
Are better episodes.
Or just the one that people download. That doesn't make it a
Hall
better episode.
Hall Out the Holly at 108 downloads.
That's fucking insane. Fucking...
I don't know why.
It's if any of you downloaded the Hall
of Holly. If you are one of these people that like are one of the Hall of the Holly downloaders, why? Because I can't find anything. I've done Google searches. I've tried to find maybe someone linked to this episode. I've chased the rabbit hole. I can't figure out why that episode has so many downloads and continues to get downloads. Did Lacey Duvall find out about it? What's happening?
Lacey Chabert?
Who's Lacey Duvall?
There's, oh my God, there's Shelley Duvall, there's Lacey Chabert.
Yeah, I probably mixed them up.
Lacey Duvall is some actress. Oh, she's a porn star.
Yeah. 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 That's games.
That was upsettingly on brand for you.
It's going to be real funny. I'm going to look her up. It's going to be real funny if I've never seen her before. Like, I just passively know the names of porn stars. Lacey Duvall. I don't know who this is.
You've never seen any music videos of her?
No. I've never watched this woman fuck.
Oh, wow.
I just know the name.
That is so upsettingly on brand for you.
Yeah. I check off a lot.
Okay.
Not ashamed to say it. I'm not one of those gooner freaks. I'm anti-gooner.
Sure. No, that I...
Jack off for a fucking purpose.
So, genuine question. I tried to talk to my brother about this. Gooning is just edging, right?
Kinda. Edging's more about denying reaching that point so it's stronger when you get to it. Like, there's an end goal of like, oh, I'm gonna blast so much fucking grunt. Okay. As far as I can tell, like, gooning... It's never really in the dialogue shooting rope. It is kind of like touching your dick to porn forever, but never shooting rope, never gooing it, never slime timing. It's I just don't get it.
So it's just it's
not like the worst part of it, like the least interesting part.
So it's never mind. Never mind. I want to talk about Synecdoche, New York.
but this guy was a gooner.
Caden?
Yeah.
What makes you say that?
This has that vibe. You take 40 decades to make a play. You're a that's theatrical gooning.
So this is a masterpiece.
It is.
We are disrespecting this movie right now.
It's, I don't know. It's a lot of movies that aren't masterpieces are easier to talk about. Like, you can't describe like the Mona Lisa to someone and them get it. This is something you truly have to experience. It is truly an art film. It's an art film. Because there's like narrative films and there's art films.
But this is narrative. This has like,
well, yeah. Well, art films have narrative, but like an art film is like one you really like. Reading the plot doesn't do it justice. You know, like you truly have to. Like, it wouldn't work as a book.
It would have to be written entirely differently.
Yeah, like the like.
I think it could work as a book if written like.
Yeah, but I think like an art film. An art film is something that truly utilizes the medium to get across something. Like, Chinatown's just a good story, but Chinatown would be a great book.
Sure.
I don't think this would be as great a book as it is a movie. It is entirely a beast of its medium.
Okay.
You have to steep in the juice of Hoffman and as many women.
So, it is... Philip Seymour Hoffman is one of the greatest actors to ever live.
That's what I'm saying. My mom's like, oh, I'm like, he's...
And it is such a shame that I want his son, Cooper Hoffman, to be good so badly.
That's it. The sad thing is he can be good, but he'll never be his dad.
That's the thing, is that he's...
He'll never be his dad.
He's so competent. He plays the part as he needs to play the part. He's one of my least favorite parts of Saturday Night. Like, I think, I just think he's miscast. Like, I don't like his performance in that movie. But I don't know if it's I don't like his performance or he's just shooting straight in the way that, like, his dad shoots straight, but his dad is, like, his dad, like, shows the ultimate, like, gravity of the emotion in a way that he doesn't.
Yeah.
And he's young still, so maybe, like, it's quite possible that he can, like, ascend, but...
I'm not sure he's ever going to be as good as his dad.
It's also unfair to compare someone's entire career to someone else's whose career just started. But, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the burden of being the son of Philip Seymour Hoffman. Like, it's like going to baseball, being the son of, like, Babe Ruth.
Yeah. I feel very similarly to Cooper Hoffman as I feel about Wyatt Russell, in that he's a very competent actor. He plays the parts well enough, but he's not fucking Kurt Russell. We need to give them time. My point is, I want Cooper Hoffman to succeed. I want him to succeed so badly.
I'm sure he will succeed, but he's always going to be living under the shadow that his dad's Philip Seymour Hoffman.
And what if he uses that and becomes Philip Seymour Hoffman?
I don't think he will. That's truly a once-in-a-generation talent. Once-in-a-lifetime talent.
I mean, yeah, we have Jack Black. Jack Black is the greatest actor to ever live. The second greatest actor to ever live is John Goodman. Philip Seymour Hoffman, right, might be number three.
You're placing Jack Black?
1,000%. Yes. Unironically, Jack Black could do what Philip Seymour Hoffman does. Philip Seymour Hoffman cannot do what Jack Black does. Oh, 1,000% he does.
Jack Black, he's not, he plays like, he is range, but it's within a certain area. He plays like a multiverse of himself, unlike The Rock, who only plays himself, but he plays very similar characters in most things.
Jack Black has very specific roles, specifically Bernie, which I will bring on the show eventually. The more I talk about Bernie, the more I want to rewatch Bernie, and the only reason I would ever rewatch Bernie is for this podcast. But performances like Bernie, where I'm like, oh, you can do the method thing. You can fucking be an actor and give like an all-time great performance, not playing you.
I don't think that Jack Black could play this part. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman could be Stephen Minecraft. It'd be a different performance. I think it'd be a more interesting one. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman saying, as a child I yearned for the mines, would have pathos.
I feel like it would be too fucking whiny dramatic. Like, Philip Seymour Hoffman is fantastic. Philip Seymour Hoffman also, for the most part, picks parts that allow him to be so sad all the time.
This might be the wildest take.
Or at least the ones that I know him from. Philip Seymour Hoffman is one of the greatest actors of all time. I'm just saying, Philip Seymour Hoffman also has, like, Elaine, and he plays it very
Jack
well.
Black.
1,000%. Jack Black is... I think Jack Black is the greatest actor to ever live.
This is a mania.
No. If
you told like a medieval playwright this, like the doctor would come to test your
Bernie
humors.
And Bowser are two of the greatest performances, method acting performances of the 21st century. And I say that with zero irony. I don't even love the Super Mario Brothers movie, but Jack Black as Bowser gives one of the best performances I have seen this decade.
Of the 21st century?
Of the 21st century, but easily this decade.
This is what TikTok does to a man.
No.
This is insane.
Jack Black as Bowser is genuinely, like, quite possibly the best performance of this decade so far. Name a better one.
I think it'd be less wild, like, if you just named even a bad actor. That's what's wild to me. So I can't even be like, he's an actor. He's not like, because if you said, like, chose a bad actor, I'd just be like, oh, you have really bad taste for some reason. With this, you've just chosen, like, a good actor and be like, no, he's the best.
He's the best.
Okay. Okay, let's go through this role. Adam Sandler in Uncut Gems, William Dafoe and Pat Robertson in The Lighthouse.
Bowser's better. I mean that unironically. I'm correct here. Bowser's better.
Better movies.
Correct. Better performances. I don't think so.
This is nuts. Timothy Chalamet in Dune.
I haven't seen it yet. The clips I have seen, he's just screaming. Not really.
The guy who plays whatever. The Knight and the Green Knight's really good.
I have not seen the Green Knight. Dev Patel is good.
Every character and everything everywhere all at once.
No. You can argue Stephanie Sue. Stephanie Sue's the best performance in that movie. And I would still argue Bowser is better than that performance.
I don't even... Like, how do you argue with madness? This is insane. This is a wild thing. This is a nut. This is the... Like, you said that, like... Jack Black was like the greatest actor of all time, which is such a wild statement. And then you go with particularly Bowser.
There is not an actor alive who could swap between being a literal cartoon and an emotionally wrought human being in the way that Jack Black can. In the same performance, Jack Black in School of Rock balances between being a cartoon character and being an emotion, like, borderline makes you cry emotionally, like, pathos man. In the same scene, sometimes in the same line, there's one moment in School of Rock.
I think you've emotionally latched on to him because he's a larger, hairy, funny man who's doing well. And so you see yourself in him, and so you've elevated him, like, to godhood, because maybe you have some doubts about yourself being a hairy, larger, funny man. So to see someone doing so well, you go, there's my new god. You've created an idol out of him.
I don't idolize. I just think he's the greatest
you
actor.
Idolize. No, you 100% idolize Jack Black.
I do not.
You 100% idolize Jack Black. You watch his movie like twice a day. You say he's the greatest actor of all time. Is that not idolizing? Should you even build a gold Jack Black statue you offer like roast cow to?
But I don't like worship Jack Black. He's not an idol. I do not worship him in the way that I worship a god. I just think he's the greatest actor of all time.
This is nuts.
There's one moment in School of Rock.
This is my. It's year 39 of doing the play. And I'm losing my mind. Like, I truly, in this moment, understand how he felt every time something wild happened. This is how. I don't have kids. I don't want to have kids. I don't have a good relationship with kids, really. So I couldn't really put myself in the shoes of, like, someone I love saying, like, hey, I need you to admit you fucked a guy, you took anal, and that's why you left me. Like, the sheer confusion he had in that scene, that's where I'm at right now. I understand you. I understand the utter confusion of your German-speaking daughter saying, admit that you left me to have anal sex with Eric, and just being like, what? That's what I'm feeling right now. This is my surreal absurdist moment. This is my death of a salesman.
We will watch School of Rock for this show, by the way. It's going to be on a major anniversary, but we will watch School of Rock for this show eventually.
Nuts.
even if we plan on ending this show and it's our last episode.
Like, I know.
There's a moment.
I would make, like we could make a poll for this, but I know no one's going to agree.
And they're wrong.
This is the wildest take.
And they're wrong. Jack Black can do what Philip Seymour Hoffman and Daniel Day-Lewis can do. He can do
He cannot.
He can do the sadness.
He could not be Lincoln. He could not be Abraham Lincoln. He could not do
Daniel Day-Lewis couldn't be Dewey Finn. Fucking couldn't be Bowser. Like,
he could be Bowser.
Daniel Day-Lewis
I'll give you,
could
he couldn't be Dewey. He could be Bowser.
Daniel Day-Lewis could not be Bowser.
He could be Bowser.
He could not
Hoffman
be Bowser.
Hoffman could be Bowser.
No. Hoffman could not be Bowser.
Hoffman could be Bowser.
Hoffman could not be Bowser.
Hoffman could be Bowser.
You're so wrong.
You have no leg to stand on.
Jack Black can do the method actedy thing that fucking Daniel Day-Lewis and Philip Seymour Hoffman do, where they just like are their character.
Shop this opinion around to our film friends, just get their take
and
on it.
They're allowed to be wrong. I am a prophet speaking on the hill, letting you all know about the end times. I am right. When the sky turns black, you will
still
know.
No one will agree with you. Like, the thing about prophets who are chastised their own time and cast down because their beliefs are too radical is usually time bears them out. Like,
I am Galileo saying we revolve around the sun.
That was Cornopale Achilles.
No, that was Galileo.
That wasn't Galileo.
It was totally Galileo.
No, it was Cornopale Achilles.
Nope, you're wrong. It was Galileo.
Look it up right now.
No, it was
look
Galileo.
It up right now.
No.
Look it up right now. No. I know my Catholics, look it up right now.
No, it's
Galileo. Come on, Mr. Bowser boy. Show me your truth. Show me your fucking truth. Show me that you're right. It was Galileo. Look it
was
up.
Galileo.
Okay, look it up. Look
yeah,
it, up.
It
look
was.
It, up.
It was
look
Galileo. Yeah. Galileo was jailed for saying we revolve around the sun.
Who came up with heliocentric theory? Or the?
But he was the one who was famous and jailed for it.
So is Cornucopelius.
Eh.
That's who you think of when you think about the Earth revolves around the sun.
No, you think of Galileo. You think of the weird Catholic dude because you're a fucking weird Catholic.
Galileo was also a Catholic.
Yeah, but not in the same way. Galileo was prosecuted for holding as true the doctrine of heliocentrism.
Who first said the Earth revolves around the sun? Nicholas Cornucopelius, a Polish astronomer,
okay,
first proposed the Earth revolves around the sun in 1543.
Okay.
His theory was supported by Galileo and Isaac Newton.
Okay.
And then he was sentenced to house arrest for heresy.
Okay. And
it's his theory.
He can say the theory. He can invent the theory, but Galileo made it better. Galileo. It doesn't matter if you invent something if someone else just takes the credit
for it.
Is this
part of your insane prophet movement where you say not only is Jack Black the greatest actor of all time, but Galileo's actually the Earth revolving around the sun guy?
Yeah.
See, when like that's called doing a parlay in sports betting, and that makes it even harder to win.
Okay.
When you choose even another crazy thing.
Okay. I'm right. Anyway, Jack Black is the greatest actor of all time. Wow. Philip Seymour Hoffman is one of the greatest actors of all time. This movie rips. I'm trying so hard to bring this back.
We're gonna have an episode where it's like a council where we have all our film friends on, and it's just you defending this take to them.
Okay.
It's like one of those. It's like
they can all be wrong.
The PowerPoint
stone
things.
Me. I don't care.
I will. I'm gonna be judge, and I'm gonna have a pile of stones. And every time someone says throw a stone at him, I do.
Without sin cast the first stone, motherfucker.
I mean, you're the one sitting here. Also, I have crazy takes too, so I'm free. I have crazy takes I cling to. I'm free to throw stones as much as I want.
No, but you are not without sin. And if you believe this be sin, your crazy takes also are sin.
It's nuts. It's not even wrong. It's just
so I've been going crazy.
Yeah, I have very clear evidence of this.
No, it's not. No, the Jack Black thing is just a thing that I believe and have believed forever. Not forever, but like in the last couple years, I've really like solidified my opinion.
We got a text from Vic. She said, "Sorry, I've been binge watching Yellow Jackets, but that's wild enough to bring me out of my fugue state." Fascinating that he thinks it truly.
Okay, so Do you have more thoughts about the movie, or are we done and we just disappointed Philip? Philip, I hope we didn't disappoint you. Know that I love this movie too.
I mean, I think it's a fun episode, regardless. I mean, it's like watching the movie, where it's not necessarily about what we're saying. It's about the truly, truly like abstract, absurdist madness you're feeling as Harrison goes, Jack Black is the greatest actor of all time. Not best comedic actor.
Nope.
Not best musician turned actor.
No.
Just
he was a musician after.
Full stop.
If anything, he's an actor turned musician.
Not the best of that category, just...
Nah, probably not. Nah, he's just the greatest actor of all time. I don't think this is that weird. I think you're wild for thinking it's wild.
It's wild. I have at least one person who's like, this is a wild take.
Okay.
You can't say this isn't a wild take. If you have this take, you have to look in the mirror. And you can sure say, I'm a prophet, no one understands. But you have to realize, you have to follow that up with, because although what I say is true, it is fucking insane. It is a wild thing.
It can be wild.
It's
sure.
Wild.
You know what? Fine. It is wild.
Do you think School of Rock is the best movie of all time?
It's my favorite movie of all time. I don't know if there is a best movie of all time.
Okay, that's a healthy opinion.
But it is my favorite movie. So, any final thoughts, and then we can do socials.
Thank you, Philip. This is truly like a movie that is just so... It is like all my art is kind of like... It's something that like ending the movie with a person giving the stage direction die is something that I would do.
Yes, you
would. Something I write. This is so aggressively like like the same genre shit I would write. It is not that far removed from the central thesis of On Hella Strings I Fly.
I was going to say, I'm shocked that Hella Strings does not end with just the narrator telling the puppet to die. It might now. Are you going to redo that draft?
No, I redid the draft. Combined some characters. Moved a bit of the narration. Had it more in-house. I moved my focus more to him brainstorming kind of the love child of Dante's Inferno and the myth of Orpheus. But it's also a critique of people who watch Scott Pilgrim and think I'm a Scott Pilgrim and that's a good thing. And it's constantly kind of going between this Dante's Inferno classical play, like tragedy, and a more real world version of events, which will kind of begin to cross and bleed. There's also the audience participation is going to be a big part of it. I need to find someone who's good at improv to play, because the fourth wall does not really exist for the main character. Although the second wall, the wall between the two plays happening at once do, but that begins to thin.
I look forward to reading your first draft in 3 years.
I want this to be a play.
Yeah.
This is my attempt at writing a play.
I look forward to reading your first draft in 3 years. Do you want to do socials?
Yeah, I'll do socials. You can find us at Two Men. Well, do you have any final thoughts?
I mean, I don't know. I've been going crazy the last several weeks.
Yeah, we know.
And this movie kind of was very existential and like made me feel all of the things all at once. And I didn't cry, but I definitely teared up at the end. Just the die, and it's this release. And I felt like as if my soul was leaving.
It emotionally hit me. I had to sit a bit after watching this movie.
Yeah. Just thank you, Philip. Thank you so much. Do you want to do socials?
You can find us on Instagram at Two Men in a Movie Podcast. Two Men Movie Podcast. You can email us Two Men Movie Podcast. You can use these platforms. We respond probably best to Instagram, although no one really emails us. But you know, those are two really easy to reach us. If you want to offer me condolences for being trapped in this Jack Black worshipping Sodom and Gomorrah that Harrison will soon trap me in as the God Prophet of Jack Black, where every day I'll be forced to watch School of Rock twice a day and then go pray at the giant Jack Black statue. You can find me at Midwest_Magician, where I will send my pleas for help through Morse code blinking, because I'm like, yeah, I love Jack Black, and I'm blinking like, please, God, help me. You can find us on YouTube, where I imagine eventually in like a year or two after the podcast has ended, because Harrison's gone completely off the rails, he'll be posting his Jack Black-related manifestos. You can find us everywhere else, like Two Men Movie Podcast.
You can... You can find me on Instagram and TikTok and Lemonade at harrisonpool.com, P-O-O-L-E-D-O-T-C-O-M, harrisonpool.com. Thank you so much to Tristan Hostetter for our theme song. Thank you for listening, Philip. I hope we did this movie justice. I love you, Matthew. Goodbye.
Love you too. Don't let the Germans take your kids. Hugs and kisses.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.